My name is Dawn Conrad. I am a prison chaplain from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And we are going to talk about simplicity, the Christian lifestyle. Now, I got quite a bit of the Bible study today. I found that we were using one of those scriptures, which I am going to use too, if I can find it. You know, living in a country where the common denominator, I call it a problem instead of a common denominator, is keep up with the Joneses. Now, why would anybody in their right mind want to keep up with the Joneses unless your name happens to be Jones? My name is Conrad, and I think my heart's fondness for anybody would increase whom I would see keeping down with the Conrads. I think it takes as much effort. If we look at the biblical context of normal living, what does the Bible say about our lifestyle? Remember the year of Jubilee in the Old Testament? Remember the agricultural setup of the resting of a portion of the land every 7 years? Remember the kinsman redeemership, whereby a person who was struck by poverty for whatever reason, I had to have their land redeemed by a kinsman? It may surprise some people, but God is not a capitalist. So what makes anybody think that capitalism is a Christian lifestyle? No way is it. By the way, before I go on, I've heard a few people say that they had trouble with my English. I know this is a Northern German British, and I know you may have problems. I remember I had problems with this very interesting language that people were trying to pass off as English when I came to this country. So I know you may have that problem with me. Also, when I get into the mainstream and I realize that little watch is ticking away, I have the tendency to try to squeeze 120 seconds into a minute, which is totally impossible. So please, if you miss anything I say, I don't talk for my own entertainment. I'm talking because I believe that God has a message for you. Just flag me down right away. I'll be most happy to repeat what I was saying, if I can remember what I was just saying. So I think that the American lifestyle at this time is very unbiblical. I'm sure we've all heard all the statistics about what a tiny percentage of population this country is and how much, up to 70 and more percent of all the unrenewable resources we are using up. Okay, yes?
Did you say the American lifestyle is very unphysical?
Unbiblical.
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 Okay.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah, all right.
All right, here we are. Individuals, couples, families, well, what do you suppose I could do? I mean, this is a giant affair, sure. But you know that saying, it's better to light one little match than to curse the darkness. And if somebody blows the match out, well, get a supply of matches. Strike another one. Now, I may be having an easier time keeping down than most of you, because we went through a very vicious, wicked world war with air raids from night number one to the last night of the war, and were just really in very deplorable situations. However, not having anything more than one set of clothes left, the only worry I had, and had my husband too, the only worry was if we washed the clothes by night in whatever little water we could find in a brook, if it was going to get dry till the next morning, because it's not very appropriate to run in your birthday suit, right? That was the only worry we had. There wasn't much furniture to dust. There wasn't much space to clean. There wasn't much to worry about. We were so free. You won't believe how creative you become when you're living on the bare essentials. Not that I want to advertise bare essentials. That is too much, because I won't advertise monastic lifestyle. That's for a few who choose it for whatever reason. The rest of us should live in the world, but not be of the world. Anytime, this is a little bit autobiographical, and you may try it on for size. Every time I walk through the Nicollet Mall, and that's why I have to transfer from bus to bus. I don't have a car. We come to that later on too, cars. I look into one of those beautiful windows, and there's this beautiful, super skinny model standing there and advertising something which would look just gorgeous on me. Adding a few inches of my proportions to it, I could still wear it. And I come to think, well, now this would be really nice to have because, and then I think, well, let's face the facts. You are not going to get it for all the reasons that you know. So, since you're obviously not going to buy it, what have you got at home that you can wear on the occasions at which you would have worn this? Well, the minimum solution I come up with is one. And I can think of a combination of skirts, I don't usually wear slacks, of a skirt and a top or a blouse. So, with two possibilities, why would I want to put something else in that closet? No sense in it. And if some of us feel, oh well, I've had it for so long, maybe I should have something else, what would people think? Well, let's face it. The person who has always got new stuff is never going to prove to anybody that he or she is able to take good care of their stuff, right? Takes skill and know-how to keep something up. And that is what I would consider good stewardship. We've heard all about how the earth is a gift to us, right? And a gift is there to be given. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that we have to give away everything. I found, this was a new discovery for me, that it can also be stewardship if somebody gives something to you. Now, of course, the best idea is if somebody gives something to you that you can use, you give something else away instead. Well, I found to my great surprise that I was accumulating old things. Well, this can be patched, this can be mended, this can be darned, and if I just cut a bit off the seam, make it a bit shorter, I still can wear it. Then my goodness, what am I doing with all this stuff? And I realized there can be a purpose. If you really have very little income, you know what it does for you? If you have very many old things, not very many, if you have you ever considered how much you can save on utilities if you run your washer not quite as often? And if you've got a small load, it's still a waste. So I realized, so what if I've got 4 or 5 summer dresses? I can wear them one after the other, and in the end, I've got one wash load. By that time, the weather has changed. That, too, is good stewardship. So there are so many different ways of being a good steward and making best use of the gifts that are ours. And giving on to somebody else does not necessarily have to mean that we have to give of what we feel. We've just got barely enough. And this was brought home to me a number of times when I, feeling guilty, does that sound familiar? I felt guilty that I didn't have the means to contribute financially. And I became very apologetic. I said, I have not got anything to give. All I can give is myself. And there, a woman looked at me very lovingly, put her arm around me and said, John, How many people do you know who are willing to give that much of themselves as you do? Never dawned on me that this was a fact. God expects of us to give of ourselves. Any one of your talents can be used. Some things don't cost a cent. They are free. Your listening, your smile, your investment of time. I found that, well, anyhow, statistics are totally unchristian. They are unbiblical. Remember what happened to David because he started statistics? God got on his tail. Read it up. David wasn't supposed to keep statistics. That's for the pagan. What are we doing with that? I have found that in my work with inmates of all different backgrounds, in the same time that I could maybe see 8 women or 8 men, I can possibly only see 1 person who is of American Indian background. It takes a long time for them to begin to trust, in many cases, and it takes a long time for them to just really get to the point where they can say, thanks for listening, or, yeah, I think that's it. You know, make some closing statement. It takes sometimes 3 hours with 1 person. How much time does Jesus spend in the Bible with 1 person? How much time is he willing to spend with each one of us? Time should not be the greatest value. I said yesterday, well, we are living in a society that advocates vegetating at jet speed instead of meaningful living. That too is something we have to come off of. We've got a choice if we want to keep it up. We can choose to die of a heart attack, of cancer, of stomach ulcers eventually, or, well, cancer, what else? Is there heart attack? That's about our choice. Yes?
Strokes.
Or strokes, yes. That's our choice. Is that what we want? Is that good Christian stewardship? We don't have to put everything in 24 hours. We don't have to have everything that everybody else has. Another thing, if you go shopping, all of a sudden you realize, oh, I forgot to take something to eat along. You've got a choice. You can buy 2 items that's ready there. All you have to do is buy it and put it in your handbag, or you can go over there to the fruit department. Fruit is probably much healthier anyhow. And you look at, okay, there's Reese, there's M&M, there is Cadbury, there is Hershey's. Why would you want to buy 2 or 3 candy bars and having to throw away the wrappers? Some of them are treated in a way which is hard to recycle. That's waste. Is that good stewardship? Moreover, how many candy bars are good, nourishing items for your system instead of junk food? I think junk food is not only heavy on our stomachs and our health, it's also heavy on our budget, isn't it? There's so many things where we just consider what we are eating. We go into the store. Now, simple life does not mean, in my opinion, to buy Swanson's or Mrs. Paul's, whoever is there, TV dinners, you know? Saves time. It does not. It does not really save time, because you can make a nourishing meal with simple ingredients. I do it. And when you're done with the TV dinner, what happens? You throw away another bag full of sometimes recyclable, at other times unrecyclable resources. Do we have to do it? Well, it's bad enough that we buy little soap bars which are individually wrapped. somebody said it's because of the sanitary aspect, because of bacteria, all those germs. I thought a soap is there to cleanse our skin. And it's kind of an agent that fights bacteria. So why do we need the soap that's supposed to fight the bacteria? Why do we need to wrap it so it's protected from bacteria? I'm not very logical, but that doesn't sound logical either. We are throwing things away. Okay, this is a fact. It comes equipped like that. Yes, but do we have to accept it like that? We've got one weapon. We can tell the manager, I'd like to buy it, but I'd rather have it unwrapped. I'm not buying it until it comes in an unwrapped variety. And enough people do that. Or somewhere somebody was bringing their own containers and were publicly unwrapping all that food and putting it in their own bags or containers and leaving the store with a lot of cellophane and other stuff. I don't know the outcome of that, but I thought, it's pretty provocative, but it may just work. Maybe this is not something that anyone here can do, that I could do. But you see, if enough individuals come together for a mass action, something's bound to happen. Another thing, there are all those nice things. Well, you don't even have to go through one magazine or one newspaper and not realize that there are all those things that they say you can't live without. And if you've got it, now you need the new model. Now you've got the new model, you've got the new improved model, the new fail-proof model, the new supermodel. Isn't that the way it goes? They kind of build this throwaway into things. And same, of course, goes for clothing and for items in the home which 100 years ago were made by hand. Now, what is wrong with doing things by hand and doing a few other things collectively? Now, we've got these sometimes still sexist church groups, men here, women there, children there. Have a healthy family life is what it's called, right? Well, that's facetious. But anyhow, see, we can do so many things. I found this in Mount Airy, which is a housing project, which is, of course, its own worst problem. But people were unable to get even enough clothes for their children. Their furnishings were cheap and falling apart. And as we all know, if you are poor, you cannot afford cheap things. If you are poor, you need to buy that which is best quality, because otherwise you have to keep buying all the time and throw away again. We have, as women, and men too, I'm not sexist, I hope, we have got the possibility to create something. Why buy something that 75 people will wear? All you have to do is go through a street and there you see somebody coming at you is wearing exactly the same stuff. Go into somebody's home, oh yeah, I've got these curtains too. Or do they look better there? Makes you feel bad. We have got the ability to design. All we have to do is look at how designs look somewhere. In a museum, in a Sears catalog even, at a wallpaper place. Look at nature out there. There are so many ideas which we can follow. And heaven forbid that we do something paid by number equivalent. We can design our own. We can learn to weave. I started weaving with a 20-inch rigid heddle frame loom. Now I've got one that's 38 or 42. And there are techniques by which you can make a seamless tubular weave on one. In other words, if you learn some basic techniques, you've got it in your hands to buy cheaply the right kind of material, cotton, silk, linen, wool, synthetics, and design your own. And invest the time while your children are doing the homework and ask you questions. You have your pattern down on paper. You don't have to say, wait a moment, let me get to this point before I answer the question. You can have it down here. you can have some teamwork again. And if there is something good on TV, or is something in the newspaper that's worth considering, well, what's wrong with father or mother, whoever is doing it, reading it out aloud instead of each having a section? And while you're reading it out aloud, everybody is free to react to it. It may just make for better conversation. Try it. And with one rigid header frame rule, you can make everything from the thinnest, most delicate curtains and tablecloths to carpeting even. Depends upon the width at which you set your warp and upon the material. You can do it yourself. If society does not want accept us because we haven't got the almighty buck to buy it, well, forget about society. We can live without them in so many ways. Same goes for knitting and crocheting, which is fun, is creative, and is conducive to good family life. If you, well, it takes time. If you consider the fact that you may spend half an hour on the freeway or trying to find a parking place somewhere where you go to shop, and all the time you waste behind the checkout counter or just choosing things, and how much you spend for gasoline or for bus tokens, and then look at how much do I spend if I willingly give up this kind of a lifestyle and try something new on my own. You may find that not only do you rediscover some creativity, which seemed to be lost, but you're also saving money, which you can invest in something other than gasoline, wrappings. There's so many ways. I mean, I'm not trying to present you a whole row of items which you can do. I'm throwing out a few ideas which are simple, can be translated into everyday life. How many breakfast food boxes do you find in your cupboard when you go home? There's the All brand, there's the 40 cent brand, there's the Raisin brand, there's the Wheat Chex, there's the Rice Chex. Well, what do you do with the wrappings? What do you do with bottles, with plastic bottles? We don't really need them, do we? And if we've got them, it takes some transition, what do we do with them? Garbage, trash man will pick it up? Or do you clutter up the way we do it? We clutter up our front porch with, there is the one bag into which egg cartons go, and there is where you flatten out your tin cans and your aluminums, and there is the bag or the box into which glass goes, and well, we can't avoid the plastic that goes into the trash. And there are churches, church groups, there are quite a few places, and Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, who will do the recycling. In Minneapolis we've got right in our, not exactly a neighborhood, but some 20 blocks away, we've got a place where young people are recycling things. All you have to, yeah, and paper, of course. All you have to do is bring it there. And since last year, we even have a pickup of recyclables. I think not to waste anything helps us to develop a Christian lifestyle. What else is there that makes for simplicity and makes for better relationship? And I'm not even thinking of things like growing our own garden plot around the house, or rent a plot. And we try it. We've got a few tomatoes this year, and we've got a Bernie, very lovable chestnut Argusi Netherland dwarf. With everybody's friend. Yeah, because the litter pan makes marvelous fertilizer. It's very organic, and bunnies are vegetarians, so it doesn't burn anything, and it can be used just about the year round. We don't need chemicals and over acidize or over alkalize the soil. or spoil it or overuse it, we always replenish. And anything that's left over from our food, if the little bunny doesn't eat it, then it gets into the compost. People don't know about the compost because it's just a heap by the garage. We have to do something about that before anybody realizes what's going on there. We shall, real soon. As soon as we've got enough hand power to do it with. But there's another thing. And I remember 3 years ago when I first met John Schramm, he was talking about some of those bigger things that are nationally of importance and concern, and I think he went into how to build houses. I'm sure he has spoken about that here, but I remember one of the things that I brought up to him, that, John, wouldn't it be nice if we could take, after all, we are going to run out of petrol, of gasoline. We won't need all those superhighways. Wouldn't it be nice if we could just simply convert them all into railroad tracks and get this country going on a much more energy efficient and very well working railroad system? Maybe we'd have to take some of those clover leaves and make them into shamrocks or whatever, because the trains might derail on these little clover leaves. But that would be an idea. All right, that brings us to the question of, do we need all the cars that we have got running? It just really, it gives me a pain in the neck and elsewhere. Usually right in my head, I get a headache. When I sit down on the bus that isn't moving on schedule, why? Because there are cars, some of these nice little bugs, and other those huge monsters. What are they? Cadillacs. How many people are in there? One person to one Cadillac. How many miles per gallon does that old ugly beast get? Don't tell Cadillac producers that I said it's an ugly beast. Some people think it's beautiful. I mean, how much energy can we waste? Do we have to have it so much at our convenience and be egoistic about it that we cannot maybe pool with somebody else? I think it was in the late 60s or early 70s where this has been tried. What happened to it? My goodness, how many parking tickets does anybody need? How much gasoline does anybody need to waste just to get somewhere without having to take the umbrella along or get there 10 minutes before the bus would get us there? All right, sure. There are places where we cannot get by public transportation, which we need badly, in my opinion. But we can still get by with one car per family, I believe. Just as we can get by with one TV per family. And we don't need those big ones. We've got one this size, and it's 10 years old or so. It's black and white, and it works. Gives us all the 10 o'clock evening news, and the Channel 2, and Nova and Wild Kingdom and those things that we want to watch. If we would just again begin to consider carpooling, maybe it takes some persuasion to get our schedule together. Right? If three women in the block want to go shopping on Monday morning, why have one Volkswagen, one Chevy and one Subaru zooming out and having difficult time finding a parking spot instead of, let's see, how much do we want to buy? And take that car, which is efficient enough to get everybody's load home. And in a very physical way, bearing in each other's burden. Okay, I'll have to get it into your house, and the strongest one unloads last. Now that's theory. But don't you think that there is a possibility to do this? And getting kids to school when there is no school bus, and most schools have got buses. There's so much that is possible that I'm sure, as I see it, in the Twin Cities, that we're not doing. And I think there too ranks under simplicity, doesn't it? But what else does it do. What's the difference between sitting there behind your wheel and getting upset about the red traffic light? That's what I used to do when I had a car. Another one of those red traffic lights. You sit there.
Don't raise your blood pressure.
Yes. Now, what did it ask to you people?
Sociability.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And I think it can be so helpful. It's so much simpler. And it weighs so much less unreplenishable energy. How many junkyards do we need because there are too many cars on the road? I think that's something we all have in our power to do something about. By the way, have you ever considered the versatility of a bike? I've got one. I wasn't able to carry it up this year because I've got very weak wrists. But a bike, if you put a basket in front and one of those clip-on carriers in back, you can go shopping, you can do very healthy exercises, you can enjoy whatever is around and not add to the pollution of the air with gasoline fumes, which are all so bad. All right, I've thrown out a few ideas. Now, have I got you thoroughly up in arms against it, or have I got you confused, or... All right. Come up with some yes, but, or tell me what you feel that can be done. That I know I can't touch on all those things in this short time. This is your hour. Yes.
May I counter with something?
Yes, please.
What you propose then to do with the big our economy then, since the automobile and the gasoline is the basis of much of our economy.
I know that is a problem. However, if we would think of ways to employ people more fruitfully and with a vision toward the future. I mean, any strike, any natural catastrophe can wipe it out, right? I think it's very much the same as it is with war industry. I took a few quarters in principles of economics. And at that time, there was a war going on in Vietnam. Our professor had checked into it, and she's a real expert, and she said it would not cost a single person a job. There would be employment for all who would become unemployed because of no more weapons produced. And she had a few fields. I'm not an economist, but I know that with some intelligent consideration for the future of not only this country, but our children and grandchildren, that this can be reversed. We don't need all of that. There are other things which can be produced. Just because we haven't thought of everything that's possible doesn't mean it's not there. I know that is a problem. All right, here we are producing so many cars. We still need airplanes, right? And we still would have to develop a railroad system. I've got a hunch that if we would consider railroad systems in all details, economically, ecologically, and every way practically, so people would use it, that we could absorb a high percentage of car producing workers in all areas of their production and put them to work there. I don't know how, but I think it's possible. It would be a redistribution of workforce.
Only God can make that change.
Beg your pardon?
I think only God can make that change. I don't know how you convince people to do
it. But God can change it.
All right, I say only God
yes.
can.
Yes,
but
right.
How are we going to approach that? I agree with you.
Well, so I guess that's another...
Say,
We can pray for that. See there, that's a good thing. We don't know what to do, but we can pray. Lord, give somebody the ideas, the intelligence, and the know-how. I'm sure it's there. So let's make it a matter of prayer, yes.
It happened during World War II. We couldn't drive in our cars, we rode the planes, everybody, you know, we just didn't have it. With our stamps, we couldn't make it.
Well, what happened to the...
So we went on the trains, or the buses, or public transportation.
Uh-huh, yes. See, that's what I firmly believe. That is the word, public transportation. I've got a hunch that all these people who are in the car industry now, I'm not going to be there 10 years from now. And not only because we are going to run out of resources, but also with these strikes going on, with everybody wanting more of that for me, myself, it's going to have two effects. It's going to up the price to the point that many people will drop out of the market, right? And also, because of that, or at least in some connection with that, there is going to be a layoff of men and women because they can't any longer to afford all those people working there, and automation is going to take over. That is it built in. It's going to come down in any case. At least that's the way I see it. Mass transportation is the way out. And the bike, yes.
Seattle is doing something in that manner. They started out to get their metro system to get riders by establishing parking areas at the end of the line. People funnel in and park their cars and ride the bus into town to relieve the pressure on the city streets. And they have just opened up an additional I-90 lane.
Uh-huh.
That you can drive in if you have three or more people in the car, and you can zip right on through while the others are sitting in the traffic jams that happen during the rat race in the morning. See, and so that in that particular instance, they are doing quite a little in Seattle area, from what I can understand or read and what we see on the television. So the possibilities are there. It's just the people willing to give up their own independence a little bit and be willing to ride on a streetcar or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Something similar is being planned for the Twin Cities, as the people mover that St. Paul is planning, and Minneapolis. I am not sure if there is an ordinance yet or not. But it, when you get down there, it looks as if there are more cars parked on the outer edges, in the outer areas than downtown. And of course, if the weather is conducive to the formation of those big smog clouds, anytime you approach, you just wonder, my goodness, how much oxygen is there going to be today? It's very unhealthy.
Yeah.
And that too, again, I feel is very, very bad stewardship. Oh, yes, but it brings me to something else.
Somebody referred to people riding the buses and trains flying airplanes during World War II. And during that period, I was a commercial intercity bus driver, and we were stashing them in the buses before we could. We had to have half our seating capacity standing before we could call for a second car to come to meet us at a given point. The trouble there was, the reaction was that, boy, just as soon as this war over, I'm going to get back in my car, you see. There were no lessons learned, the thing that led a cartoon suggested that the driver would say, step to the rear, please. Step to the rear, please. Somebody busted open the rear end exit door, and they were just going around in a circle. the thought was there to have that kind of transportation. Now, the company that owns the territory that the company I grow for, who were great for local in an inter-city, inter-community business, they don't want that. They don't want local business. They want you to buy a ticket to Chicago or somewhere else. They are not interested in you buying a ticket from Wenatchee to Kashmir. They'll sell you one, but they don't care whether you ride or not, because that's the short haul. They want you on the long haul, so you zoom right on through. So they get the money, they get your dough, and that's the attitude of the company that purchased the company I used to drive for during the 30s and 40s.
We have not yet touched on another area which also has to do with simplicity and tuning down. It's back to what do we wear. Due to the way in which my father brought me up, I've learned a deep respect for all the other creatures that are around. And it just makes my stomach sick when I think of how little animals are trapped, suffer terribly in traps, and maybe are thrown away, those little corpses of songbirds, of other little creatures which are not good, money-bringing, furthering animals. They suffer and die and are discarded off like an old plastic bottle that's leaking. Yes, I know, fur coats are nice and soft and warm. That's precisely why God gave them to those little animals. They need them. God made them for the purpose. He's got a specific spot in creation. If they are intruding on us, well, who was there first? Maybe we are intruding on them. And maybe they are intruding because we have upset the natural balance. Maybe just because people have it in for wolves. Fairy tale, wolves, and spooky stories. Well, I know that in some parts of Minnesota, there are rattlesnakes, and they are increasing. Why? The only natural enemy is the wolf. Wolves have been exterminated. Animals are there for a purpose, and we have to learn to respect them and not kill them for their fur. I'm sure we are all familiar with this beastly, terrible clubbing to death of little fur-bearing seal pups and leaving the corpses there. And those animal mothers have got feeling. That is such a terrible abuse of God's creation. That too is gift of life for us. And what are we doing? Why, by the way, do we need fur coats? Fur coats are not a status symbol. Again, why keep up with the Joneses if your name isn't Jones? You know that actually a nice heavy wool coat that's well lined is just as warm. We can do with nice warm wool coats. And if we need something that's absolutely rainproof and want a natural fiber, remember what Abraham and his descendants lived in? Tents. You know what the tents were made of? Goat's hair. You can spin and weave goat's hair, and after the first downpour, it's absolutely rainproof. We do not have to use anything that God has meant as a natural piece of clothing for an animal. Sheep can be shorn. They must be shorn anyhow when it gets too hot, or they can even suffer from a heat stroke. I'm not very much aware of how they die, but they can die. We've got sheep, we've got goats, and we've got plant matter around us. We haven't even found all that can be utilized that is there. I'm sure I'm learning something new just about every month. I didn't know that. So we are so, I don't know, greedy, vain, what would you call it? We don't make much good sense. All right. I have heard there are farms where they farm mink. I wouldn't want a mink coat. I wouldn't want people to farm minks for fur if it can be avoided. I know people breed rabbits for their meat. Okay, if we want rabbit meat, and I know my little friends that I had where rabbits eventually landed up on the table and my mother forced me to eat my friends. That was cannibalistic. But okay, rabbit meat is good for food. Rabbit fur is nice and soft and very warm. I understand that rabbit fur is warmer than, for instance, Arctic fox or any of those. So why not, if we have by all means to have what they've got that God hasn't equipped us with, he's given us skin and some hair, why not then be rational about it and use only that which makes good sense nutritionally, ecologically, and if people want to eat that, fine. That's all right with me. I'm not a judge on what should and what should not be utilized. But I think as Christians, we have to be responsible for our co-creation. We are part of it. And if we keep up our lifestyle as it is now and don't simplify, our grandchildren may not have an earth to live. We'll be out of oxygen. We are also out of time almost, right? And we store much too much. We waste in storing. When we were down at the Bible study, I'm sure you heard the manna mentioned again. How did God supply it? Daily. And when they were walking through the desert 40 years, what happened to their clothes?
Didn't wear out.
Well, maybe our clothes wear out, but God has given us the know-how to pet, to mend, and to do all sorts of things, to recycle things. And again, I come back to what I started out with. We were our most creative, freest, and probably carefree and happiest at the time when we had absolutely no more than the absolute necessities to live with. And there was always enough food. We had to prepare it. Yes.
But anyone who lived in what they call the Great Depression realizes that truth. People were contented with less because there was just plain less for them to get, and right. Everybody was in the same boat. That wasn't difficult to realize that in our own family we were happiest then, because we weren't in the mad scramble to achieve and to succeed and to measure up to the standard of success that other people had set for us, for them as well as for themselves. Now, I think the problem exists in that the economy, the government is so hard to come by, cutting down government budget costs, etc. Everyone is willing to see budgets cut on the other guy, but don't cut mine. And as long as we have that kind of thought in whatever part of life we have, in the lifestyle as American people, as people of the United States, not much is ever going to happen until we get down to where there is nothing and there is some kind of a blow up of whatever nature, I don't know. But everybody then realizes we're all in the same boat, and here we're weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. I think that there's not a person in this room but what realizes the truth of what you're saying, but we're just not willing to pay the price.
Well, let's say that we, when we speak collectively, may not be willing, but I think we individually can do it. If for no other reason than we know that we can trust God, who has promised to supply How many of all needs?
All.
It doesn't mean that when God says, I'm going to have it there at 11 o'clock today, that's going to be there at 10:33.
Yeah.
Not even at 10:58. God may bring it just when the clock begins to strike. But God has promised He will fill all our needs. He's never said He'll fill our greeds.
No.
And I think we can trust Him for that, yes.
Well, I can give you a little example where I come from now, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And I moved, decided to move out the country. I was in Minneapolis. And I did, and when I got out there, first you got to get a guy to pick up your laundry. I'm out in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
And they charge $1 a bag. Mm-hmm. And then they have 4 or 5 bags every Monday. I have none. And they laugh at me. They say, oh, I wouldn't do that. I wash my cans, dry them out and flatten them out and put them in boxes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
My glass jars the same way and everything. When I get company from Minneapolis, they come out there. The kids got to have all kinds of stuff to drink. They got to have plastic diapers like this. I'm making plain English. And all of that stuff, and I can't. There is no dumps to. They're running out of dumps. They buy farms to bring into dumps.
Yes.
And haul all that stuff out there. Put your bags, your cans, and everything else in one bag, and the garbage men will pick it up.
Yeah, and
for $1 a bag. I can't afford it.
No. And what an exploitation of God's precious gift to us, the soil, is. I think it's downright a sin to produce enough garbage to buy up farmland that God has prepared for our sustenance, that it bring good, wholesome food. It doesn't make one bit of sense. And, well, as you said, it's the kids need to have it. I think we have a lot of educating to do, and we have to a lot of living as examples to do.
I brought up 9 children and I never had any garbage.
I don't think I could say that for myself.
Part of it was we raised in the country and we didn't have that stuff.
No.
No plastic things. They weren't burned. I burned some of the rubbish. I burned. I'm a weaver and I have a lot of junk to burn.
Oh, yes.
And then I burned that and I lived out in the country so I can do it.
No, I brought 3 children, but I could not say that we didn't have garbage. We also had a neighborhood.
We starved our dog. We starved our dog anyway. He had to go in the barn and eat feed.
Yes.
We didn't have no scraps on the table.
No, I think that if you try to apply some of those things which I've tried to bring up, and I have by no means touched on everything that would be desirable to touch on. But if you think about some of those things and apply them to yourself, your family, your present lifestyle, your income, your neighborhood, your future, I think you'll find areas where you can simplify, where you can get together with somebody else. But why on earth is it such a strange intrusion on somebody's whatever living space it is? You know, in Europe, let's say the jacuzzi, if you touch somebody else's toe with yours, you know what you do? Smile. What do people do here? Ooh, quickly, pull it back. I don't quite understand it. There seems to be an innate desire to keep your privacy private. What on earth are you going to do if the Lord would ever send you or your children to a foreign country where they've got long houses? Or Guinea, where people live in groups and everybody is watching everybody else? You'd die from claustrophobia. I think we have to learn too that so many rooms per family is just simply enough. We don't need huge rooms. Who can afford to heat them or cool them all the time? And we don't need as many rooms. The moment we make up our minds that we don't want to accumulate that much, that we need it on. Bigger and more is not better. It is probably worse. If you have to invest so much time taking care of all your stuff, you'll find that where you fall down first in allotting time is your quiet time with the Lord, your prayer, your Bible study, because that's something that isn't right on the urgency list, right? You can do it later. Oh yeah? I just want to see that person who has just really had one of those typically American urban days that starts at 6 in the morning and ends somewhere 10:45 in the evening, and then find that 1 hour to be with God and not fall asleep. See, we are cutting down our communication with God. Okay, if you feel that that is misstated, please contradict me. But that's my observation, that if people get too involved, anybody, in the matters of this earth, then we shortchanging God. Yeah. This earthly life is going to come to an end. And our heavenly mansion is going to probably correspond to the size of our spiritual life, our time with God here on earth. Now, I would feel uncomfortable with my new spirit body being allotted a little dark house in heaven. I think I'd want a nice large house. We don't know. It's just Jesus said he's going to prepare a place for us. And as our work here, so is going to be our reward. And with that, he doesn't mean how big was your bank account, how expensive was your car, or how much pure gold jewelry, 24 carats with diamonds that you have. That is not it. Our works are going to be that which we did as one member of the body of Christ, loving our neighbors as ourselves. I think that's what it's amounting to. And as I said, we can trust God. He's going to meet all our needs. We don't have to go on strike for bigger incomes. We don't have to try and keep up with the Joneses. Try it from maybe 1st of October on to Christmas, and invite your neighbors to keep down with you. And if they think you're nuts, then that's their problem. Moreover, wouldn't you rather be a nut for Christ than an influential person for Satan? So I hope I've left you with some thought. If there's any, I think we are out of time. I'd be very happy to talk with anybody privately. I'm going to be around. So thank you for your interest, and shalom.